Good afternoon, you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, the 1st of March, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Brown, I'll be your host for today. We'll get an update about library activities with Beth Weigel. We'll talk with Justine Munch, one of Aware's Women of Distinction this year. Poet Sarah Isto and Sandra Clevin, Circuit Magazine editor, will offer a preview of tonight's poetry reading at the Hangar. We'll talk with members of the Juno String Ensemble. We'll talk with Rich Ritter about his new book, The Perilous Journey Begins. And we'll talk with Cherry Eklund about this weekend's Read Across America event. That Writer's Almanac, Burn Note Music Awards today on a Juno afternoon. Don't forget tonight at 4, live coverage of Super Tuesday from National Public Radio. Weather forecast for tonight, clear skies, high temperature around 43 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Minnesota is among states taking part in election activities this Super Tuesday. Voters will meet in caucuses across the state. On the Red Lake Reservation, Democratic Farmer Labor Party caucuses will be held tonight for 4 precincts. Caucus conveners will pull support for the Democratic presidential candidates, gather platform topics people want for the DFL, such as environmental, crime, housing, sovereignty, and Native rights. They'll also discuss local races, which include 2 tribal members campaigning for state representative and county commissioner. Michelle Paquin serves as co-chair of the Red Lake Political Education Committee, a grassroots nonpartisan group. Paquin says the caucuses help with Get Out the Native Vote efforts.
We want to set the tone for the leadership for our area. We are always encouraging Native people to, you know, get into the race. We've been really lucky to have people who've stepped up for school board elections, county commissioner elections, state representative elections. We can't sit passive by while people make decisions about funding and representation of our issues at county, state, and federal levels. It's so important for them to feel as though they're a part of this. And even though everyone's focused on the presidential election, at home here, within our community, still a lot of issues that, you know, need to be brought up, and we need to have that local voice heard.
Caucus locations for Republicans are held off the Red Lake Reservation. More than a dozen states are holding primaries or caucuses. A lawsuit alleging violations of the Indian Child Welfare Act in Pennington County, South Dakota, is now back in motion. Last year, a federal judge found that judges, prosecutors, and child protection officials violated ICWA and the way they conducted hearings immediately after children were removed from their parents' care. But for the past year, the judge has been reviewing defendants' motions for reconsideration. Victoria Wicks has been following the case since it was filed in 2013 and has this report.
Judge Jeff Viken sided with plaintiffs a year ago when he agreed that parents' rights were not observed at hearings held within 48 hours of removal of a child from a home. Plaintiffs include Native parents and the Rosebud and Oglala Sioux tribes. Viken said a year ago that parents at the 48-hour hearings were not given adequate reasons their children were taken away and didn't have a chance to argue for immediate return of the children. The next move is to establish what needs to happen. Plaintiff's lawyer, Dana Hanna, says Viken will hold a hearing in which parties can have a voice toward a solution. After that hearing, Viken will issue a ruling that instructs parties how to proceed. Hanna says he assumes that ruling will direct the court to provide indigent Indian parents with lawyers to represent them at 48-hour hearings and that the proceedings will be more meaningful.
It will require the state to put on some kind of actual witness to give testimony in the hearings to show why DSA should continue to keep custody of the children.
Hanna says the plan should outline a legal standard that has to be followed before DSS can keep custody of children.
The injunctive relief will spell out the specific requirements for a constitutional and legally adequate temporary custody hearing.
Judge Viken still has to rule on plaintiff's complaint that DSS failed to train its workers to meet ICWA requirements. Attorneys for defendants declined to comment on ongoing litigation. I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The U.S. Department of Education announced Monday it's more than tripling funding for grants to help Native Americans become college and career ready, from $5.3 million to $17.4 million. The awards allow tribes to identify ways to achieve college and career readiness for their communities, which could include early learning or language immersion. The Education Department expects to grant 19 awards to tribal communities by the end of September. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the Gathering of Nations to the Wise Pies Arena, a.k.a. The Pit, April 29th and 30th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at ahcnm.org. Support by the 2016 Forum on Dropout Prevention for Native and Tribal Communities, March 6th to 9th. 400 educators and youth practitioners from over 30 states sharing best practices on dropout prevention. Info on registration at dropoutprevention.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 a.m. and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Next in the studio, we have Beth Wengel and Andy Hirsch here to talk us about library activities. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Busy day.
Busy day for you and a busy month for the library. Once again, we've got all kinds of things happening at the library, and we're going to kick off. Andy and I are going to kind of go through the month here and give you an overview, and we'll kick off tomorrow night, Wednesday, March 2nd. We always have Lego Club the first Wednesday of the month out at the Valley Library, so that's a fun time to come and build with Ty Keltner for kids 18 and under. Bring your parents, have fun. It's a great time. We'll also have our final hosting, be the host for the final Wildlife Wednesday out at the Valley tomorrow night. And UAS Assistant Professor of Marine Biology is Heidi Pearson is going to talk about blue carbon, and I know she's probably coming on to talk more about that tomorrow. So keep your ears poked up for that.
So after that, Thursday, the 2nd of March, we are starting our adult education class series. So if you don't have your GED and you're thinking about getting it or you are currently studying for it, this is a great time to come in. We are going to have an expert at the Valley Library, 5:30 to 7, to talk about what you need and give personalized instructions and study tips and practice tests, all sorts of stuff. So this is every Thursday in March and April, and it kicks off this Thursday, 5:30 to 7, highly recommended.
Right, and also on March 3rd, which is Thursday, we'll have our usual downtown family night at the downtown library. And this month we're inviting Dr. Jessica Blanco. She's a pediatric dentist, and she's going to talk about teeth and care. We always have a light supper and a craft and a nice program. So that'll be really interesting. Parents, bring your kids and learn all about pediatric dental care.
I'm very incisive.
I know. Moving into the weekend, March 5th, we have Read Across America. I know you have somebody coming on here in a little bit to talk more about that, but it's going to be a great time at the Valley Library all day on Saturday, March 5th. And
then we move into the following week. So on Saturday, March 12th, we are going to have two workshops, both on genealogy, thanks to Teresa Campbell of the Gastineau Genealogical Society. So if you have ever been interested in tracing your family roots or finding out where your family comes from, at the downtown library, noon to 2, there's going to be an introduction class, beginning genealogy. So it's going to cover things like how to get started and how to stay organized and where to find sources and is that source reliable. And then there'll be a short break. And then starting at 2:30 to 4:30 at the downtown library, there's going to be a session on Ancestry.com, which is one of the world's biggest genealogical databases. It has tons of records, and it's available for everybody for free if you come to the library. So Teresa and people from the Gastineau Genealogical Society are going to lead these, and they're going to be fantastic. So you can come to one, you should come to both. Everybody should come.
And then we move into later that week, Thursday, March 17th. We always have our preschool family night out at the Valley with AEYC, and we're going to do some things on social-emotional development and have special guests, crafts, light supper as well.
And that morning, Thursday, March 17th, we are having a seminar, Home Safety for People with Dementia, put on by SAIL. And so it's a seminar for caregivers that highlights the different ways that you can minimize environmental risk factors and practical solutions to help your home, to help home safety and for daily care with people with dementia. So that's 10:30 in the morning on Thursday, March 17th at the Valley Library.
And then as we come towards the later part of the month, we'll be doing another Science on Screen program. Author and naturalist Hank Lentfer, who resides over in Gustavus and many of us know as the author of Faith of Cranes. He's also been working on a nature recording the sounds of Glacier Bay with Richard Nelson. He's going to come over and be our speaker for our Science on Screen presentation, and then we'll be screening the film A Burger's Guide to Everything, which is a, you know, very nice PG movie that I think families can enjoy. It's about a young boy who, you know, just thinks he's discovered a new species of bird, and he and his friends undergo, you know, a big adventure. And, of course, a lot of issues that come up when you're a teen are sort of paralleling their adventure, and they're dealing with that and talking about that. So it is also part of the National Night of Science on Screen, so all of the different small art house theaters, and we're one of the only libraries that's paired up with a theater, but we'll be all showing different films that night, and there'll be some really interesting programs going on across the nation. So it'll be on Tuesday, March 22nd. We'll show the film over at the Gold Town at 3:30 because it's spring break and kids can go and enjoy the film early in the day or later in the day at 7, and then we'll have the talk at the library downtown at 5:30 with Hank Lentfer, and that'll be really great. We're going to continue that theme on our Science Friday that week because we're going to do a day where you can come in since it's spring break on Friday, March 25th, and we'll learn all about our feathered friends with the Raptor Center, and they'll bring in some of their favorite raptors and whatever, and it'll be great fun to learn a little bit more about birds with them, and we'll re-air movie Birder's Guide to Everything at the library then in the Valley on Friday, March 25th. And then we also have on the 24th, Thursday the 24th, we're going to have an author visit with Carol Feller Brady. She's a local elder and resident here in Juneau, and she wrote a book called Through the Storm Towards the Sun, and it's a lot of her memories of growing up in Sitka. She's, you know, now, you know, loving to reminisce and talk a lot about some of the historical events that she's studied, like the Battle of Sitka and that famous painting, and how her ancestry and people in her clan were part of that, and it's just going to be a really interesting evening of conversation with Carol Brady on the 24th out at the Valley Library, and we're really honored to have her come and talk with us. Otherwise, we've got a few other just random things to mention. Don't forget, every Saturday at the Valley Library, the AARP folks are coordinating free tax help, so you can come out and get tax help from them. Also, we are the voting location for the special election. Has nothing to do with today, but on the 15th, we'll have our special election for mayor, and the Valley, as well as Douglas, I believe, are both polling places. So, and in the future, because we moved from the Mendenhall Mall over to the new Valley Library, that'll be a new polling place in the future. And then we'll also be closed on Monday, March 28th for Seward's Day. So you can check out all this information if you missed something or want to know more details on our website at juneau.org/library or on our Facebook page, or just give us a call at the library.
What's that number?
586-5249.
Yep. Just give us a call.
All right. That's why, Andy. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the first of March 2016, St. David's Day, patron saint of Wales, a holiday in Wales where the Welsh wear leeks in their lapels. There are parades and poetry recitations and music competitions singing in the Welsh language. It's the birthday of the poet Richard Wilbur, New York City, 1921. Went to Amherst, married his college sweetheart, joined the army as a cryptographer. But when they found out he'd belonged to leftist organizations in college, he was reassigned to the infantry. He said, "It was quite true that I held leftist views, but then, as now, I had an uncomplicated love of my country, and I was naively amazed to learn that my service record was stamped suspected of disloyalty." He fought on the front lines, Italy, France, and began writing poems. He said, "There are all kinds of ways to forget how frightened and disoriented you are, but one of the best is to take pencil and paper, which is all you need to be a poet, and which makes it possible to practice poetry in a foxhole." Richard Wilbur said, "As embarrassing as that word is, inspiration, I do think it corresponds to my experience. A poem comes looking for me rather than I hunting after it." It was on this day in 1872, President Ulysses S. Grant signed legislation making Yellowstone this country's first national park. Early explorers had sent back descriptions of geysers and steaming rivers and boiling mud, and people didn't believe them until the government set out an official scouting party in 1871, and they established that Yellowstone is home to one of the world's 30 active supervolcanoes responsible for the hot springs and the geysers, including Old Faithful. It's the birthday of the poet Robert Lowell, born Boston, 1917. It's the birthday of Ralph Ellison, Oklahoma City, 1914, the grandson of slaves, inspired by meeting Langston Hughes and Richard Wright to become a writer. He was sitting at a typewriter in a barn on a friend's farm in Vermont, recovering from a bad kidney infection, and he typed the sentence, "I am an invisible man," not knowing what he meant by that, but he wanted to find out who would think of himself as invisible. It took him 7 years to write the book. Invisible Man came out in 1952. Here's a poem by Richard Wilbur on his birthday, "Boy at the Window." "Seeing the snowman standing all alone in dusk and cold is more than he can bear. The small boy weeps to hear the wind prepare a night of gnashings and enormous moan. His tearful sight can hardly reach to where the pale-faced figure with bitumen eyes returns him such a god-forsaken stare as outcast Adam gave to paradise." The man of snow is nonetheless content, having no wish to go inside and die. Still, he is moved to see the youngster cry, though frozen water is his element. He melts enough to drop from one soft eye a trickle of the purest rain, a tear for the child at the bright pane, surrounded by such warmth, such light, such love, and so much fear. "Boy at the Window" by Richard Wilbur, from his collected poems, published by Harcourt and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by Staples, offering tech services for small businesses like PC setup and repair, some tasks completed by the next day. Staples.com/tech services. Staples. Make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 19 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. I'm Jeff Ron, I'm your host for today. Our next guests in the studio are Sarah-Lynn Tabachnik and Justine Munch, one of Aware's four women of distinction this year. Thank you very much for coming to the station today.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your award.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, what about you, did you know?
A sunny day like today, about 38 years ago, after I got married and was working in Seattle, my husband and I decided to move to a small town from big city living, and I got a job at Bartlett Regional Hospital, calling from a payphone in Super Bear. And it's been a wild ride ever since. So I don't think the payphone's there anymore. But, yeah, it was literally a day like today in the summer. And it's been a wonderful community to live and work in and grow up in. So, yeah.
Now, you didn't sit still. You started a cardiopulmonary rehabilitation program, KidSafe, vaccinate, you know, kids.
I've had a number of different jobs. My biggest focus has been cardiovascular nursing, and I did, after graduate school, start the cardiopulmonary rehab program and wellness and cholesterol screening, along with some other major movers and shakers at the time, and then transitioned to pediatric nursing when two daughters were born into our family, and that shifted my focus to KidSafe, which went on for about 15 years. And I know K2 has been very involved in advertising that, as well as aware attending KidSafe, and moved on to public health nursing and Vaccinate Kids Coalition, and then circled back around to cardiovascular and stroke disease prevention and worked to develop a stroke implementation system using telemedicine CART at the hospital emergency room, and ended my career after that for the last almost six years working as a university professor for UAA for the School of Nursing. So I think I've come full circle. I'm a student again.
So clearly when you saw a need, you took it on.
Yes. Yeah, I sort of like a dog with a bone. A catalyst is a nicer way of describing it, but my motto has always been, with healthcare and nursing, what was best for Juno. Juno's been an incredible community for me to grow up professionally in, and giving back, and the organizations I've worked with saw the same needs, or I was persistent enough to allow them to see the same needs and move forward. So, yeah, exciting.
Who has been some of your pivotal inspirational figures, and if we don't know them, describe why they're inspirational to you.
Wow. Well, there's been many. I would say for a lot of them, they were the Dr. Henry Akiyama at the beginning of the CCU unit. Bob Valiant at the time was the hospital administrator and was very forward-thinking in terms of those programs. The people on the FASD teams, and really the students that I worked with in terms of pediatric care. And I think my patients are where I get the biggest inspiration from, the people I care for. I can't say that there's one single person. Every time you work with someone on a project or take care of them when they're ill and not well, or trying to prevent disease, provide you with inspiration and direction. So you just have to listen.
When did you decide that you wanted to go in the healthcare field?
Well, actually, I was just talking to Sarah Lynn about that. I hadn't really thought about that very purposefully, but when I was in middle school, my mother, I found my mother in a coma. And now I know what agonal breathing looks like, but I thought she was just snoring and ran to my next door neighbor, and she ended up being medevac and surviving and is going to celebrate her 91st birthday. So I think cardiovascular nursing and critical care and all of that was sort of the underpinnings of my decision to go into nursing. Yeah.
Any advice for people who are not only in the nursing profession, but the profession of helping people out?
Yeah, I would listen to what people need and try and meet those needs and look for opportunities to give back to your community.
So you're having a dinner.
What am I going to have for dinner? I have no idea.
That's a common question with interviewers. They check the microphones by asking what they have for breakfast.
What are they going to have for breakfast?
Sarah Lynn, can you tell us about the dinners, please, and a brief description of why you thought Justine needed to be honored?
Well, I think Justine gave the greatest description, right? I mean, she's looking out, seeing how she can be helpful with her heart wide open and very thoughtful and forward-thinking and making things happen. So we're delighted to honor her this Saturday night at Centennial Hall.
Are tickets still available?
Tickets are still available, only at AWARE, 586-6623. We had to stop selling them outside of AWARE so that we could keep a close count because we're almost sold out.
That's great.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah. So doors will open at 5:30 on Saturday at Centennial Hall. We'll have a silent auction, music by the Rob Cohen Trio, and a no-host bar. And then at 7 o'clock, the program begins.
And that's this Saturday. What time does it start again?
That's right. 5:30, doors open. Program begins at 7 p.m.
Sheldon Tvechnik and Justine Munch, thank you so much for coming to the station today. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I would just encourage people to come on down, and if you don't have a ticket, go to Aware and enjoy the evening and celebrate all the women of distinction in Juneau.
And now you've had a time to kind of talk about it and think about it. What are you having for dinner tonight?
I think I'm having asparagus and salad.
That's healthy.
Okay. Thank you.
See you tomorrow, Jeff.
Good music. That's Matt Herskowitz Trio. They're performing tonight at 7:30 at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. In the studio with me now are poets Sarah Istow and Sandra Clevin. Sandra's also the editor of Cirque Magazine. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
You're welcome.
Sandra, could you please tell me about the magazine?
Cirque's a literary magazine. It was established just about 7 years ago by Michael Burwell out of Anchorage. I joined him about 4 years ago as editor. As he left the state, but we've continued to work on it together. It's a literary magazine that publishes in all the genres from fiction, nonfiction, poetry, book reviews, interviews, plays. Comes out twice yearly, and who we publish are the people of the Pacific Northwest and Alaska exclusively.
Why should people have poetry in their lives?
That's a good question. I think a poem can be called an act of attention. A poem will bring a person in to focus on sometimes things that are very small but important to finally see. And one can see through the eyes of a poet things that they may even have known. Poets bring it to light.
You said that in a very poetic way.
Oh.
Do you find that you start answering all questions like a poet?
This is my first interview, on this subject.
You're doing a good job.
I'll try to keep it up.
Sarah, could you please tell me why Sandra's here?
Yes, she and her co-editor, decided to have a poetry reading here in Juneau of poets and writers. It's not all poetry. There's some prose as well, who had been published in CIRC magazine in one of the issues, and invited all of us to join her for this, to do a little reading. I think everybody is going to read for about 6 minutes, and so we'll have a sampling of the 10 Juneau writers. It's at the hangar on the wharf. It's tonight at 6:30, and it's free. Go ahead.
Who are the poets?
Well, among them, I'll just read them down. Susie Gregg Fowler, Wayne Owen, Emily Wall, Margot Waring, Sarah Istow, Misty St. Clair, Marie McMillan, Richard Stokes, Robin Hirsch, and Joan Pardes. So some of them will be doing prose, most of them will be doing poetry.
And we're also going to have music, a local group of young people with a band called Full Circle Students are going to be providing the music.
That's cool. Tell me a little bit more about your magazine. How do you choose magazines for inclusion?
From the submissions, every time now, there are some journals that have been around for a long time, and they might get thousands of submissions for each issue. And so they have, you know, they really have to look with fine-tooth comb for those that they want to publish. And they reject far more than they receive. I mean, as kind of they should in a way, there's no space for, you know, so much. Now, CIRC does not get in that number of submissions. It's always been robust. We get about 300 submissions per issue, and they come from excellent writers and poets. So we still have a hard time selecting from that group of submissions, and often we have things we quietly accepted in our own minds as we go through the final process, and then find that it creates a journal approaching 200 pages. And so things that were in, we have to quietly, without informing the person, take out again and then give them the nice general letter that goes to everyone saying there were some things that we wanted to publish, but space requirements made it that we could not accept your piece. And that's hard to say, but we don't want people to know they were in until we had to cut and burn, slash and burn, as Michael calls it, you know, in those last pulling out, you know, maybe 40, 50 pages we have to take out that had already been in.
So the opposite, what makes for a good poem?
Two things I think are really important. Right off the top of my head, I would say image and emotion. And if you can capture that, and if you capture image in a way that brings a person into your scene, that's a very good thing to have accomplished. But if the reader also feels along with the poet, that's a remarkable thing, and that's a good poem.
Why does poetry excite you? And I feel like that's a legitimate question because there's a lot of passion in what you're saying.
Well, I am a poet as well, with a published collection of poems and other writing. And when I'm in my game, and I'd say, just sort of add to that, as an editor, I'm not always in my poetry mindset because I have other mental work to do. But when I am, poetry will accompany me in my mind, lines will present themselves. And when I'm really sharp, I'm writing them down as they occur. And that's a remarkable place to be. Some excellent work has resulted from just being aware that I have poetry in my mind and ought to write it down. Don't let it escape. Too often it happens while I'm driving the car, but I have been known to pull the car over, grab something, or speak into the voice memo on my phone to capture what was happening in my mind.
Sarah, what's a good poem?
Well, I agree with what you said about the emotion and the image. I also like the music, the sound, and although I like people to read my poems, the idea of hearing them is very appealing because the rhythm and the sound of the words together is also important to me.
Cirque is having a reading tonight. You have 10 poets. Starts at what time?
It starts at 6:30.
And it's at the Hangar by the Wharf.
It's at the Hangar by the Wharf.
The bar is open.
And we're hoping that people will join us and we can have a nice evening.
Will copies of the book be available there?
Yes, they will.
How many pages is it?
About 140.
Cool. Is there anything like that I'm going to forget to ask?
Yeah. We also publish art. Almost every page has art on it. It gives a place for the poems and writing to lie. It's a beautiful journal on the inside, and it is that way because we receive submissions from the artists and photographers of Alaska and the Pacific Northwest.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Support comes from Alaska Robotics, featuring comic authors Kate Beaton, Ryan North, Kazuo Kibuishi, and Raina Telgemeier in Juneau this April for a mini-comic convention and artist camp. Registration information at minicon.alaskarobotics.com. Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juneau.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
AWARE is proud to announce the 2016 Women of Distinction. Congratulations to Marie Darlin, Justine Munch, Missouri Smythe, and Christy West. We'll celebrate the honorees at the 20th Annual Women of Distinction Gala and Silent Auction on March 5th at Centennial Hall. For tickets, call AWARE at 586-6623 or go online at thejackoraware.org.
It's about 37 minutes past the hour and you are tuned to June Afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm your host for today. And our next guest is in the studio is author Rich Ritter. His new novel is called calls himself the New Voice of the American West. And the book is called The Perilous Journey Begins, Seven Entangled Lives. Rich, thank you for coming to the station.
Thank you for inviting me, Jeff. I appreciate it.
So is this something different than you usually work on?
You know, actually, it's the previous book I did, Heart of Abigail, was a test. So it takes place in Juneau during the mining days, 1890. And this book actually takes place between 1862 and 1882. And there's actually some relationships between the characters, but I'm not going to tell anyone what those are.
You call yourself the new voice of the American West.
Actually, the publisher calls me that.
Oh, cool.
The publisher said, you need a bold statement about who you are. So it makes me a little uneasy, but that's what they came up with. There's certainly been many fabulous writers of this genre. And so, but he said when a reader picks your book up at the bookstore, they have to decide within 5 seconds whether they're going to put it down or not. So you need a bold statement, and that's what that is.
Who are some of the old voices?
Zane Grey, Louis L'Amour, Scherer, who wrote several, many good works, Larry McMurtry, Owen Wister, who wrote The Virginian. But actually, the only book that I've ever read in that genre is Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry. So the publisher said, is this book in the Louis L'Amour genre or the Larry McMurtry genre? And it's in the Lonesome Dove genre.
Cool. Tell me a little bit about the plot. It takes seven lives, and you bring them in one book.
Yes, they all start from all over the world, seven different primary characters. And in this entire first book, which is the first book of a trilogy, they spend their entire time in this first book getting to Silver City, Idaho. So at the end of the book, they are about to arrive. And then in the book two, they will all be in Silver City and start to develop certain relationships. So I originally wrote the entire book as a single novel, but the publisher said that no one's going to buy a book that big, that expensive from an unknown author. So we were in a quandary for a while. Then my wife, Chris, suggested, well, why don't you break it into a trilogy? It's already written in three parts. And so I spent the next 6 months after that idea doing that. And so So the entire thing is already written.
It's interesting. You've got the seven stories, and that's told on top of another story.
Yes, there's a book within a book, which was an idea actually borrowed from Winds of War by Herman Woke. So there's a fictional writer, nonfiction, Muriel Ann Ravenscroft, who has written a one-volume concise history of the American West. And so I introduce excerpts that are relevant to what's happening in the story just to give the reader nonfiction background about the American West. So there's an excerpt about the Transcontinental Railroad. There's an excerpt about the Buffalo Hunters. But all of them are inserted to give the reader authentic background. And then there's what's happening is her husband, John Ravenscroft, is reading her draft. And so they have interesting discussions where he suggests different punctuation and approaches, and they have spirited arguments about how they should do that. So that's a story within a story.
Did you have any idea, an outline, what was going to happen? And it's interesting enough just seeing one book, but you've got three books.
Yeah, actually, I tend to spend a lot of time on a story outline. And so in this book, I began in January of 2010, and I worked all the way through the end of April writing the story outline. I outlined every single chapter. I decided pretty much every character, named them, described their background, when they were born. And it was about 24 pages single space by the time I was finished. It took about 4 months. So before I even started writing the book, I had it pretty well outlined. I did make a few changes. I would say about 90% of it held. For example, in book two, which is not out yet, I had a character in the original storyline that was going to be an Irish doctor. And I was inspired to change it to a woman doctor, Guinevere Dupree, just as I started to write that chapter where she was introduced. So I may have made some changes like that. It just felt right to change it, and so I did.
And now you're with author Rich Ritter. He's got a book signing coming up soon.
Yes, on this Friday at the Senate Mall. I'll be at the Senate Mall from 4 to 7 for First Friday signing books. And I also have available my other two books, Heart of Abigail, which is the previous one, and then my first book, Toil Under the Sun, which was a novel about an adopted child who does not believe he is worthy of love. And that was actually completed back in 2006.
Do you have time to read a couple of paragraphs?
Sure. I could just read the first paragraph of the introduction. Was it a prologue? This actually begins with Muriel Ann Ravenscroft in San Luis Obispo in 1907. So, as your eyes searching the distant sun-dappled hills above the polished rim of a porcelain cup, Muriel Ann Ravenscroft sipped green tea. She set the cup on the wide arm of her Adirondack chair and glanced sideways at John Ravenscroft, her beloved husband of 8 years. He balanced over 2,000 pages of meticulously typed manuscript on his legs while reading the last page of the prologue. When he had finished, he inserted the 27-page introduction behind the table of contents and adjusted his reading glasses down his nose. A breath of cool air swirled across the veranda. John quickly laid his hands on top of the impressive pile to prevent the pages from scattering. Muriel waited for the gust to subside before tapping her foot and coughing in rhythmic counterpoint, a personal affectation John had come to know well. What did you think of the prologue? And it goes from there.
What's your secret for painting a picture with just words?
You know, I wish I had a good answer to that, but I have to say that I see a lot of things. Many times I'll have an idea, and then it'll emerge full-blown a week later with a lot of vivid imagery. So I think there are things going on subconsciously. There are also times when I just, through hard, brutal work, slam something out and then revise it. So it's a number of different things that happen. I will say that when I do dialogue, I'm probably two notches away from borderline schizophrenia because I actually start to see and hear my characters. So I probably should have admitted that over the air, but there you go.
So you remind me of your book signing Friday, what time?
Friday at the Senate Mall from 4 o'clock till 7.
And that's part of First Fridays.
Yes, part of First Friday.
Rich Ritter, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Oh, I just want to thank you for inviting me. And how are you doing these days? You're very busy.
It's working public radio.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people know their membership dollars are going to good use.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
from the Matt Herskovitz Trio, again performing tonight, 7:30 at Juno Arts and Culture Center. About 46 minutes past the hour, are tuned to Juno Afternoon here on listener-supported public radio. In the studio next, we have Elias, James, and Diane here to talk about the Juno String Ensemble's upcoming concert on Saturday night. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff,
for having us.
First of all, who's in the string? Who's performing Saturday?
So it's all of Mr. Shaw's string ensembles. We have Ursa Minor and Aurora Strings and a couple different quartets he has together. Ursa Minor is the younger group of string players, and Aurora Strings is the older group, mainly middle school and high school kids.
What pieces are going to be performed?
We're going to be performing a couple different pieces, a couple different genres as well. We're going to be playing some classical music. And also some more modern songs. We're going to be playing Pirates of the Caribbean, for example, and West Side Story. And then we're going to be playing some Copland, a hoedown piece from Copland, and that's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to playing that for you guys.
So there's music for those who like classic movie music and also those who like traditional fiddle and bluegrass.
What time does it start?
It starts at 7 p.m.
That's Saturday. How are the pieces selected?
Well, they're selected by our director. We give a little input. We give suggestions and stuff, and it's up to him what we play and stuff.
And what do you play, James?
I play, like, instrument-wise. I play cello.
Mr. Shaw really does a good job of looking at the kids and their skill, and he selects pieces that allow them to grow musically, making sure it's an appropriate stretch for them, and, of course, always music that they like. I know Elias and James have enjoyed over the years playing a lot of Beatles music, and yeah. I noticed, sadly, there's no Beatles this year.
Maybe you can do something about that next
time. I'm hoping that they're going to do an encore and do a Beatles and surprises.
Do you have any advice for younger players?
Practice. Definitely practice. Show up on time with your music and your instrument. And definitely have a good attitude about playing.
James, you want to add anything to that?
When you're practicing, work efficiently. It's important to play fun stuff as well. It's all about having fun, so it's good to keep that in mind.
As a parent, I can say that I've noticed that when kids play together in groups, whether it's four, these guys play in a string quartet, or 25, when they play with the large ensemble, doing it with someone else who has similar interests and similar age is always a lot more fun than practicing by yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I would agree.
Is Lisa Abias performing also?
She is.
Yeah, she'll be playing with us a song called Meditation that the symphony actually played in. I'm not sure if it was their last concert or the concert before.
Yeah, we're really privileged to have her. She does some coaching for the kids and comes and listens to the ones who are really advancing and encourages them to participate in the symphony. So we're very, very happy that she is coming and performing with us. So she'll be the featured soloist, and Elias and James and all of Aurora Strings will support her playing background.
All right, thanks so much for coming down the station.
Yeah, I hope, and Jeff, I have a ticket here for you if you want one. We have tickets available at the door. We are at Northern Lights United Church at Saturday night, March 5th at 7 p.m., $10 a person or $30 for a family. That's for great chamber music, and there's always a lovely spread of refreshments at the end. So let me know if you need a ticket.
I'm going to take up on it.
Okay.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Have you ever had a mob of birds descend on your yard in midwinter? A passing flock of robins suddenly drops out of the sky. A moment ago, the yard was empty of birds, but now it's full. They settle into a mountain ash or winterberry laden with bright red berries. They seem everywhere, gulping down the fruit, or jumping into the air in brief flight to snatch a berry from a hanging branch. sometimes other fruit-eating birds, such as the starlings, accompany them. The species often travel together while searching for food. Imagine what the world looks like to a wandering flock of robins on a dreary winter day. There isn't much in the way of bright color down below, but when they pass over a fruiting shrub, those red berries signal like a neon sign on a restaurant. Time to stop for a meal. A flock of a dozen robins can strip a heavily laden plant of every last berry in half an hour. Then off they go, looking for the next open-air restaurant. You can learn how to provide a feast for your backyard birds when you come to our website, birdnote.org. BirdNote's produced by John Kessler. Our writers include Bob Sundstrom, Rick Wright, Todd Peterson, Ellen Blackstone, and Gordon Oriens. The music was composed and played by Nancy Rumble and John Kessler. And I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from TK McGuire's, located in the Prospector Hotel and open 7 days a week, serving lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Catering is available for events both on and off-site. More information at prospectorhotel.com.
We're in the studio with Julie Leary and Sherry Eklund, here to talk about the Read Across America event, which is happening Saturday, March 5th at 10 o'clock till noon at the New Library in the Valley. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So tell me about the Read Across America event, please.
Well, Read Across America is sponsored by Juneau Education Association, and it's an annual event. It's been going on for about 15 years here in the town of Juneau. And it's just a day, a big rally to celebrate reading, to get kids excited and produce the joy of reading. We'll have guest readers there to read with children. We'll have crafts. We'll have birthday cake, of course, for Dr. Seuss's birthday. And it should be a great time. We'll also have entertainment. The Gastineau Strummers will be there, as well as the Thunder Mountain drama team will be dressed as storybook characters. Should be a fun day.
What ages is it for?
It's for all ages, birth to 99. If you're over 100, you're welcome too. But we usually get preschool and elementary age kids. We have high school and middle age students helping as volunteers with the activities and reading to children as well.
What kind of activities are there?
Well, there'll be face painting. There'll be we'll make some bookmarks, and we'll, of course, have to make some Cat in a Hat hats and all kinds of things like that.
You might see Thing 1 and Thing 2 playing around. Also, possibly the Cat in the Hat and perhaps the Grinch might show up. We're partnering this year with the City Library, and also I'd like to say that the Friends of the Library, they donate books and coupons. So each child that comes will be able to get a free book, and they'll also, each family will be able to get a coupon. There's about 200 of those.
I'd like to ask a philosophical question. Why are events like Read Across America, and why is reading so important?
Well, one of the purposes of Read Across America is to show American children the joy of reading. Dr. Seuss said, a person's a person, no matter how small. And he would say, children want the same things that we want, to laugh, to be challenged, to be entertained and delighted. And in the process, he wrote books and helped millions of kids learn to read. Of course, we agree that learning to read and being motivated to read helps kids achieve in school.
I heard a distressing fact that most people don't crack open a book after school.
Yes, I heard that too, but having just had a book fair at Harborview, the kids were coming down, parents and children were coming, and they were buying books left and right. So some of Juno's children are reading.
Yes, and partnering with the library, we're hoping to get a lot of families that maybe haven't visited the library to come on in to the New Valley and the library in the Valley. Sign your kids up, get a library card. Let's make use of this great resource we have in our community, and let's get kids excited about reading. It's definitely linked to success in later years.
Dr. Seuss's birthday is an amazing event, an amazing author.
Yes, everybody come down Saturday, March 5th, from 10 to noon at the Valley Library.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, just there's also going to be cake, so come and have a piece to celebrate.
We also would like to say thank you to all of our guest readers that will be there. We have some legislators, the lieutenant governor and his wife will be there. Some assembly members will be there. The high school basketball team will be there. Just a lot of people. It'll be fun. There'll be something for everyone and for something for people of all ages, and I guarantee you'll walk away with a big smile on your face.
Thanks so much for coming by.
The March Barn Dance is this Saturday, March 5th, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish off 5th Street downtown. Uncle John's String Band will provide live music, and Odette Edgar will teach and call conference square dances. No experience or partners are necessary. The steps are easy, the people are friendly, and the music is lively. Show up ready to dance and smile a lot. Discounts for students and seniors free for JVs and AmeriCorps, sponsored by Juno Folk Dancers with help from KTOO. Barn Dance, Saturday.
Herskowitz Trio, they're performing tonight at 7:30 at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. So, concert brought to you by the Sitka Summer Music Festival. Tomorrow night, June afternoon, we'll get an update about all things Eden Fest. We'll learn about Saturday's community celebration on the anniversary of the Tongass Timber Reform Act. We'll get a preview of tomorrow night's Wildlife Wednesday presentation with biologist Heidi Pearson about how marine mammals can help combat climate change. Larry Johansson will be here to highlight his new book, Finding Juno. And we'll talk with Christy West, one of the Where's Women of Distinction this year. Well, the forecast for tonight, scattered clouds. Forecast for tomorrow, clear skies. Coming up next, live coverage of Super Tuesday from National Public Radio.
This is KTO.